You're screwed now, buddy, because it's Check Your Head Comics with Eclipse Spilkey. Howdy, y'all. Here we are again. I'm glad you came back, or if you're here for the first time, nice to meet you. I need to get around to finishing up my little Corbin thing. Yeah, I got some other stuff to do this episode. This is really my second swing at this. And what happened was the other night I recorded, as I usually do, just a half hour of going for it and talking. Came back to edit it this week and realized that I'd either named the file wrong or deleted the file it was in. And, well, long story short, I lost it, so I got to do it again. But that's all right. I was a little blitzed and it was kind of silly. This should be much better. I can think a little bit clearer about the topic of discussion. I found a couple issues that I'd missed last time. I don't know where I'd stuck them, but they're in a weird spot. This one is Fantagore number 1 by Richard Corbin. Oh, I'm getting right into it. You know what? The famine is over, and well, kind of. I mean, and thank you to this kind soul that I barely know, handing me a little bitty bowl of some of that hydro. And this stuff is very loud. I don't even ask him what strain it was. He just, you know, he's like, hey, brother, here you go. Put this in your thing. And I'm looking at it right now. And you know what? It's just enough for a bowl of salad. So I got it hooked up here. And I think I'm going to have to press the button if you don't mind.
Hold on for a second while I press the button.
Got here is Fantagore number 1, and I mentioned to you last time that Fantagore is Richard Corbin's press. That's his company, and this is 1970. It says this edition is published and distributed by Last Gasp Eco Funnies, and I guess, you know, at the time his Fantagore imprint was just a subsidiary and used them as a distributor, which is cool. You know, I like Last Gasp. It really helped him out. What's so funny is on the inside front cover of this thing, he created a character named Fantagore, which is sort of a hunchback kind of guy with two heads, a big whopper head and a one long arm and the other one short and big messed up feet. Everything he draws is kind of grotesque, but everything looks real, you know, everything's got three dimensions, and it's sort of, he really did create his own world here. And it's, anyway, this two-headed guy, the smaller head, talks. And he says, hi, my name is Fantagore. What's yours? This is where I live, with my brother, Uck. And he's referring to the other bigger head. He says, he's not too smart. He follows me wherever. We're inseparable. And he actually spelled it S-U-P-E-R-B-U-L-L. Come on in out of that radioactive rain, and I'll tell you some stories. Uck won't hurt you.
This is boring the shit out of me. When's he gonna talk about titties?
It's kind of a nod to the old Crypt Keeper type EC thing, you know, which I'm sure this guy grew up reading. So the first story in here is Twilight of the Dogs. Really neat story, and it's all pen and ink. This is black and white, by the way. And the scratch etching look to it's got the same feel as that Tales from the Play. That was just his inking style at the time. And there's already nudity, and I wish I could describe it. He's got aliens, nudity, and post-apocalyptic humans, and sex, and everything. Just going on in this one story. These aliens have taken over the Earth and enslaved humanity, and they just kind of wander around naked except for the guys that are look like cavemen. Oh, God. I hope any of this makes some sense, because you know what? I shouldn't have drank a Guinness. Yeah, that's what messed me up last week when I recorded this first time. It really shows a different techniques in this one issue from 1970. The next one is kind of a funny tale. Most of his things got a weird, twisted sense of humor to him, but this one seemed like it was intentionally funny. It's called Razor the Unhero. And it's told jauntily. I can't believe I used that word. This shit got me bombed real quick. It was written by someone named Star Armitage. This is what leads me to believe that, you know, Corbin was just making up these writers' names because he didn't want to admit to do this stuff himself. It's almost it's almost a cop-out. Like he was a split personality pen name thing.
I know.
Like he wanted the credit for the art, but not the story.
Totally the internet, dumbass. Look it up.
I don't know. Some of these earlier stuff by him are kind of out there. And it looks like he was reaching for something.
Nah, you're just stoned.
Just naked people riding around on horsebacks, shooting each other and kicking the crap out. I love his fight scenes. You get a real sense of the action. Like when this guy gets punched in the stomach, and then this chick, he's fighting a naked lady, by the way, with a huge, huge breast. And then she brings up her left knee to hit him in the chin, and his head snaps back, and the sound effect is a little clonk. And the impact of her knee, and then of course, he shades away the areas where that are kind of private, but it's still, you know, this guy's getting his ass kicked, and I'm finding it erotic. I don't know what to think. It'll do that to you. Corbin does it. He'll get you horny, and you don't even know why, man. But most of his earlier stories were real short, you know, 5 or 6 pagers. I guess because he was squeezing into anthologies, or he's just getting used to the medium, and this one is a real... real short one, I
guess.
Keep
in mind, folks, the Clip Spilke has done intense research
called The Devil in the Well. Story Star
of his belly button.
Yeah, maybe it is a real person, but come on, Starr? Well, then again, my name is kind of weird, too, so whatever, man. There's one last little story by him, and it features the main character that, you know, you didn't see very much later on, or at least I didn't see. The two-headed hunchback called In a Pit. And it really, you can see that there's almost like pencil sketchings. You don't know how he did the shading. This one almost looks like it was done. It's black and white, and I don't know, is that... it can't be charcoal, it's because of the different shades. It's almost like a pastel look. It makes you wonder, a lot of these earlier stuff he may have done in color and then it was transferred to black and white. He just couldn't afford to print it in color and you see color additions later. I could be wrong. I think that's how it was in a lot of his earlier stuff. There's a little print flaw in this one. Kind of half the page is faded out, but you get that with Loeb. With these low print run underground comics, there's going to be all kinds of printing flaws, and some of the Freak Brothers comics are worth more because of their printing flaws, and other books like that, you know, you may get a hold of one and it's got a purple cover and you go, oh shit, that's weird, this must not be worth crap. No, and maybe worth like $1,000. So look out for that shit too. Anything that looks really bizarre and not intentional.
Oh, boy. We'll be right back after this fart.
And I wanted to really focus this time on the newer stuff he's done. Well, I mean, just to say he's back in the light.
What?
I mentioned this before.
Back in
Bigfoot. There's... here they are. And this was written by Steve Niles and Rob Zombie. And collaborated, and Corbin did the art. It was a 4-issue series. And I didn't ever think either Steve Niles or Rob Zombie have ever written anything that really impressed
me. Especially that
fucking movie.
You know that old saying, if you get a thousand monkeys in a room with a thousand typewriters, eventually they'll spit out Hamlet. Well, you know what? I don't even remember the storyline. I just remember fucking Corbin draws Bigfoot badass. That's all it is, man. He's done some stuff for Vertigo, Gangland, which was in a short-lived anthology series. I think it was only like a four-issue limited series. He was in issue number 2 with Simon Revelstroke. Cool Brian Boland cover. Don't see much Boland anymore, at least I don't. He did a Vertigo Flinch. I've got issue number 1. I think that may be the only one he's done. Written by Bruce Jones. Cool. Not Jeff Jones. Don't get Bruce Jones and Jeff Jones mixed up. He also did Batman Black and White. Issue number 2 is the one he was in, which has got a badass Frank Miller cover. Black and white and orange. Could be red. And my favorite, Twisted Tales from PC. I'm mad these are out of chronological order, because if I remember correctly, these were back in the early 80s when I got a hold of these. 83, 84. Badass cover of Richard Corbin. It's got a chick leaning against a door that's got zombies trying to claw their way in. They're coming in the windows beside her. One's got her wrist and the other one coming in the window has got a hold of her skirt and is ripping that off. And there's a shadow obviously coming from another window on the other side of the house. But curiously enough, the head of the zombie is right between her legs, the shadow of it, and staring straight up her skirt, which is being ripped off. Just awesome.
Get ready. Here comes another fit of dumbass.
Wait, it says Jocko. No, that's Corbin. He's trying to fuck with me. I think he did use... You'll see a lot of different things over the years that he signed the bottom of his work with. Corb, C-O-R-B, is one of the ones that you can notice. And it, actually, when you get used to... I think he still uses Corb to this day. And once you get accustomed to his work, you'll spot it, and it's instant. It's like, you know, a particular color you never see anywhere else. That's Corbin. Here he is. He did some Ghost Riders. Wow, man, I hope I got all of them. I haven't checked up on these because I've only got issues 6 and 7, and I should scan the cover. This is pretty cool. I don't really like Ghost Rider. The concept seems cool, but every book I read, especially the ones from the 70s, really blew. So I would not recommend Ghost Rider unless you're just a total freak.
Except this issue. I don't know. I like Swamp Thing.
That's kind of freaky, too. What? Here's the Swamp Thing. Issue number 8, Vertigo. Can't tell the year. He usually signs a year on the cover, and I shouldn't be busting this out. 2004, this one says. Kick-ass cover. I don't know if he did this. He just did a couple of issues. Maybe a 3-issue run. Let's see what I've got. There's issue 8. And issue 7. And here it jumps up to issue 20. Better check that out. Written by Joshua Dysart. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. The first couple issues were written by Will Pfeiffer. And if you've never seen Corbin draw Swamp Thing, you haven't seen Swamp Thing. They were made for each other. I'm glad he got his freelance status up to the point to where when he did start working for Marvel and DC, he obviously got to pick and choose the projects he worked on, or at least got cued in on some pretty cool ones. One of them being the Cage series. I think I mentioned this one before, but this one's sitting here in the stack for some weird reason. It's only issue 5. I've got all of them, so... Whatever, I think I may have two copies of this one. Here's a PC Corbin special. Edgar Allan Poe. I mentioned this before, I guess I was freaking out because it wasn't there. I had the graphic novel, not this one. But it was The House of Usher. Go together like Alien Worlds number 7. You can tell this is all over the map because this is like 1986 or 87. This issue. Wow. I want to open this up and see what it was. Trying to rush this along for you because maybe I'm just spitting out words that you're typing into a search engine. But this is great. Yeah, that's right. William F. Nolan. He's a badass short story writer in science fiction. I love his work. And here he is in 1983 collaborating with Richard Corbin. Man, all the colors, and it really looks pastel. You know, it was airbrushed, but there's lots of purple and yellow hues, and there's a skyline. It looks post-apocalyptic, of course. You know, grass and trees are growing all over broken down buildings, but it's an urban scene. And just the colors in it are real neon and bizarre. And I remember this one well. I won't give away the twist in case you're reading it. He was experimenting with putting typeset. I guess, you know, he didn't like handwritten lettering in his work. I mean, he's one of those guys using typewriters to cut and paste into his work. It looks pretty good. I liked it because it, once you, your eyes adjusted to it, I liked the font and that it was steady. I'm not to say, it's really sad that the handwritten lettering and sound effect has gone out of style. I think it was perfected, and I'm going to put this down with my hand on the first book. I think it was perfected by Dave Sim with Cerebus. If, please read a Cerebus before you die. Read guys if you just got to jump in somewhere. I'm sure if you're listening to this, that'd be something you'd like to latch on to. It'd be up your alley. And just how he affects sounds, and he has a real understanding of phonetic spelling. So when he's doing accents, especially when he does his Keith Richards and Mick Jagger bits, they're just dead on. I mean, you can hear it in your head better than anybody else has ever read, and it puts anybody to shame. I thought for a while when I was young that Stephen King had a knack for displaying phonetic, weird colloquialisms in writing, but as soon as I read Dave Sim, hands down, man, I just got off on a tangent. You gotta check this crap out. The book and the sound effect. It's a real cool story. Nice little twister ending. I've loved these PCs, anthologies, and even the Eclipse stuff. All the direct market stuff that was coming out in the early 80s before everybody got all black and white crazy. And luckily they did, because they couldn't afford to print color books anymore. But it was a real good run with Pacific Comics and Eclipse Comics, and you ought to go out and if you spot anything that says PC or EC, EC of course, but Eclipse on the cover, go ahead and buy it. It's probably in the dollar or quarter bin, so it ain't going to set you back, and it's going to be worth it. There's that Banner series, one of the issues I was missing out of the other stack. Yeah, showed up. Beautiful. Of course, Corbin and the Hulk is just like Corbin and Swamp Thing. Made for each other. I thought Stephen Bissett and John Tottleben did a good run on there, especially with Alan Moore, but Corbin just makes him, he smacks him down. He did some stuff for a short-lived, I think it was short-lived, Frank Frazetta Fantasy Illustrated. I've got, I think these are both the first issue. They were one of the dicks putting multiple covers on the same magazine, so you waste $6 a pop. Douche. Wait. No. We're lucky they didn't do that. This is issue 1 and issue 3. Great. We got, of course, it's Frank Frazetta. Big fan. Ooh, a heavy metal. This is September 1992 with a oddly lesbianic cover. Some girl's got a whip, and I don't know, that looks like a hot poke on the end of it, and heels, and she's got some half beast, half mechanical harpy looking thing standing behind her. And I don't know, man, I don't like the spikes on the nipples and the flaming gear. It's just, ooh, painful. Oh, that's much more like it. She's soft, I can handle the knife. More like a Red Sonja thing. This is Heavy Metal May 2005. I don't even, it doesn't even mention Corbin on the cover. These dicks. At least the last one said The Waters of Dead Moon with Richard Corbin. This one doesn't even mention him. It's got to have him in it, or else I wouldn't have it in the stack. Let's see what the hell's in here.
Wow, nice Soydim stuff. Oh yeah, I love Mugwort. Beautiful. Arthur Soydim. I got real pissed off because the store I was at kept getting the alternate covers from Arthur Soydim of Fantastic Four, and they weren't ending up in my box. Eventually got pissed off and mentioned it about it, and then they started dumping a whole bunch of crap I didn't want in there because the guy's a moron. Oh well, I canceled my box anyway. Can't afford it. I have to go online.
Yes, you can buy your books
online. Damn, there's got to be some Corbin in here, man. Kids. It's rude.
Do it.
And that was my beef with heavy metal, is I just buy it on the basis that there'd probably be one story in there that was worth a shit. Or at least that I'd get without having to be 50 or 60 years old and a total pervert. I don't know. Man, I'm almost to the back of this book and I don't see any Corbin.
I got screwed!
You see, if I was standing at the newsstand flipping through, I'd just put it back on the stand. They didn't have it in the bag because some horny bitch on the cover with big titties didn't make them put it in a plastic bag. Crap. I ain't no Corbin in this. What the hell they're doing here? I might have to scratch the whole last 5 minutes or just leave it there to let you know how much it pisses me off that they tease you like that.
You dirty sons of bitches, I'm gonna rip your fucking eyeballs out and fuck your skull.
This one's got Corbin in it. January 1999. I'm almost at the end of the stack. In fact, I think this is the last one. And then I'll talk a little bit about Vic and Blood. And then bail out. Let's see. On the cover it says Richard Corbin and an all-new strip from Simon Beasley. They said mention Corbin first, and Beasley didn't get the cover. Somebody else did. And it's got another girl with a leather whip. All right. Well, this one's wearing lace, though, so okay, that's fine. There's no spikes on the nipples. There's no danger there. You can whip me as long as I got something to put my lips on. Sorry, where was I?
You're being a fucking pervert.
Need to have a swig of Guinness. Beasley got front in the book. I don't want to start a beef with Beasley. I mean, I like his stuff. I'm just saying, you know, overrated. Should not shine. Come on, where the hell's my Corbin? Buried in the very back of the book. Probably skipped over it. There it is. Fur Trade. Oh, this is good. This is a full color reprint. I've seen this in another edition I can't recall, in black and white, and color just totally does it justice. Beautiful. Go out and buy it, you fucktard, or download it. I don't know what you gotta do, but this is one you can buy. Whoops. Stand by. We're experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by. Wow, that was fun. This is Harlan Ellison's Vic and Blood, the orange edition I was telling you about. It's regular comic book size, but I guess they would call this prestige, square bound or something like that edition. It's real easy to read. You can open it all the way, and the way that they printed it doesn't break the spine and it doesn't come loose from the glue. I know I've read this particular copy at least 3 times and it's still holding together great. That's my beef with a lot of other books that are printed like this. They just, some poor dying horse got stuck being the glue and didn't pull it off, man. Anyway, this is the definitive edition. It talks about everything. It's got interviews with Harlan Ellison. It's printed in a smaller format, which is fine because I didn't really appreciate the large format version of it because it seemed like it was almost the same size as the original artwork, and you can't really see the whole image unless you squeeze it down a little bit.
What? Did that make even
that really shines in this edition too. I mean, it's a little bit darker than the other version too, but I think it probably is closer to the way he envisioned it. The other one had kind of like a neon glow, almost like they printed it lighter because they didn't like the way it looked dark. I felt kind of suckered buying it. But this has all the original Harlan Ellison writings in it. There's Eggsucker, a prequel to A Buena's Dog, and it's exactly as he wrote it, which is good. You get the whole view of it. It's also interspersed with new drawings and sepia tone sketchings to illustrate the new text by Corbin. So it's beautiful. And this is the part where he finds the girl. His dog tells him that he smells a girl in the movie theater, and she's disguised as a boy, and he follows her to her underground lair and find out there's a whole city full of survivors underneath there, women and shit. I won't ruin it for you. It's great. I love post-apocalyptic shit. I had this feeling that we're screwed. I mean, I hold on to hope, but for the most part, I look around me and I feel like we're screwed. Maybe I need to move to somewhere to where I can delude myself into thinking we're not screwed, but I can't afford to do that. I guess because I don't rip people off. Maybe if I learned how to rip people off, I'd get rich and I'd be able to move somewhere where I could delude myself into thinking everything is fine. Otherwise, bong! I'm not going to go on and on about this book, but I had to whip it out so I could tell you the price on it. $17.95. I did buy it full price the first time, but then I found a second copy at a place that sells everything for half price. And so I guess I got it for whatever half of 18 bucks is. And like, what, 9 bucks? Crap, I can't do math. You heard that? I'm on my third Guinness. And man, it's a Tuesday. You forced me to do it. Anyway, that's got to be good enough. And I'm sure I'd do some silly shit later on. But next time I'm going to get back down. I got the Corbin out of my blood. And I'll tell you all about some other stuff you can look out for. In fact, I think I'm going to focus on Meep comics and give you a taste of that next time. So, thanks for listening to my shit, and hope I see you again later.